Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that's for sure. Joining us today from the United Electrical Workers out of Erie, PA, author, labor historian, Jim Young. Jim, welcome back to the Union Edge.
Well, thank you.
It's been a while, Jim. We appreciate you hanging out with us and talking to us about what's going on. Worker democracy in a union in the community. Jim, this is very interesting times. I mean, we have got some in the Republican side of the House that are just doing everything they can to try and go after unions, union members. Oh, my goodness, those civil servants. How could they dare say that they want a say on the job and protections and things like OSHA and MSHA and the, you know, this kind of stuff? When, you know, my God, you can be a congressman and be convicted and sent off to jail, but yet still keep your seat.
That's true.
So, I mean, what are we looking at as a labor historian? I mean, we've got labor is always under assault of some kind or another, but it seems that it's particularly well-coordinated and well-funded these days.
Well, I think it is well-funded and coordinated, and on top of everything else, as one of your earlier programs demonstrated, we've got a situation in which the job market, while right now it doesn't seem to be too awfully bad, is looking forward, is likely to get worse worldwide as well as here. So, it, you know, the unions have become victims in some sense of impersonal movement as well as the purposeful movement on the part of corporate strategists and their willing political allies.
So how do we as trade unionists and as members of the community continue to effectively look out for not only the membership, but more importantly, all of the working folks in our community? Because, you know, in labor, there's a saying, an injury to one is an injury to all, and that includes our not yet but soon to be union brothers and sisters that haven't joined.
Absolutely, and that is how the labor movement finally pulled itself together and made a really significant impact on the American scene, economically, but also culturally and socially. But that began, you know, 80 years ago, and actually a lot longer ago than that, but kind of culminated in the 1930s, 40s, and the early 50s, when unions took on not only the employer at a specific workplace, but the ruling circles, I guess you might say, of society generally, and worked hard at improving the lots of the community, not simply workers at a particular worksite. That's
right.
Not to say, of course, that there aren't workers at a particular worksite who don't think they should be doing that. I mean, they think, well, you know, the union is for me at my worksite and for problems that come up for me. But, you know, that's short-sighted and narrow-minded, so to speak. And in the long run, it's self-defeating because, you know, others do get injured in the meantime and weaken not only their situation, their power, but undercut the power of those who, for the moment, are still reasonably well off.
Jim, let me ask you a question. You know, I'm a communicator, I'm a talk show host, and a firm believer that labor unions somewhere along the lines stopped talking to the public. They stopped talking to the target-rich environment that's out there. And because of that, we've allowed the other side to frame the conversation. You know, I will never forget when we were talking about standing up the Affordable Care Act in this country, that the opposition was saying, oh, the unions are sending people out to be Affordable Care Act navigators so they could get the names of people in the community and force them to join unions. And I mean, I'm like, what kind of drugs you have to be on to just even imagine that kind of thing, much less say it in bold face in the public.
Well, I don't think it requires any other drug than the stimulus of greed. I mean, yeah. You know, they know the facts. One of the better places to read labor relations and the labor history, my favorite Wall Street lawyer tells me, that's my older dog, is the Wall Street Journal, because, you know, they and some organs like that are trying to give their readers, who are mainly corporation people, accurate news. And while their editorial page is terrible, their news gathering is pretty good. And, you know, they know the score. And they then extrapolate from there and figure out what they have to do to further their interests. You know, this is the country, and a lot of other countries go along the same way, but, you know, think about it. We put the power of the economy in the hands of the greediest. And I don't mean that necessarily on a personal level, but, you know, the only function of a privately held corporation is to make money.
Right.
It is greed incarnate, so to speak. We put the people who run those things in charge of our economy, and then we expect them to create an economy that's good for all of us? Hello? You know, that's where the failed imagination comes to play.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, and this is, this is the kind of thing that has been going on for a while. As we're moving forward here in the United States, when it comes to labor, when it comes to dealing with politicians, when it comes to dealing with the current environment, what lessons can we take from the past history?
Well, they vary, I think, and partly because as times change, needs and perspectives change, and in fact, facts change. That is, you know, I'm one of those people who likes to think that when the facts change, I'm willing to change my mind then about something.
Mm-hmm.
By facts, I simply mean, you know, there are things that become revealed over time that we didn't know before. So, but in terms of lessons learned, if or lessons to be learned, if they haven't been learned yet, I think the most important one is simply solidarity. And that's that can be used at the level of a cliche, but in an important sense, supporting each other, whether it's within a union or within a community or what have you, is, you know, the fundamental power that people have. That's, you know, we have our numbers, and we have the fact that we're the ones who do the work. You know, if we didn't work, nothing would be done. And we have a tendency to lose sight of that sometimes. I'm thinking that, you know, I sometimes hear that by the 1950s, the American worker had become prosperous enough that he began to forget who he was, or she. That is, you know, the move maybe to the suburbs, thinking that if you're buying a house that's mortgaged to a bank, that you're a capitalist somehow. Capitalists own the means of production. The houses or apartments are another matter. They don't make you a capitalist, obviously, but people's success, rightfully earned and aided by their unions and other organizations, had created quite a success by the 1950s, and that's when you begin to see the community, the role in the community of unions, beginning to decline. And part of it is, you know, the complacency of people who feel comfortable. I mean, and you can't fault people for that too much, except when it takes when it leads to the extent that they are deceiving themselves about how secure they are, and tend to sometimes view the success of another group, whatever that other is, whether it's racial or ethnic or gendered or whatever, as a threat to their security. And it's just, I hate to say it, but it's foolishness, you know.
It is. Listen, Jim, we got to get going. I'm up against a break. We appreciate you being with us today, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
I hope so.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Jim Young of the United Electrical Workers. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.